shall I elucidate on what happens outside when it gets late? Long about midnight, the ghosts and banshees get together for their nightly jamborees. There's ghosts with horns and saucer eyes, and some with fangs about this size. Some short and fat, some tall and thin, some don't even bother to wear their skin. Oh, oh, I'm telling you, brother, it's a frightful sight to see what goes on in the night. Have a midnight jamboree. They break it up with fiendish glee. Ghosts are bad, but the one that's cursed is the headless horseman. He's the worst when he goes a-jogging across the land, holding a noggin in his hand. Demons take one look and groan and hit the road for parts unknown. And there's no wraith like a spooky spurn.
They don't like him and he's really burnt.
He swears to the longest day he's dead, he'll show them that he can get ahead. Lock the doors, unless you're careful, he'll get yours. Don't think he'll hesitate a bit, 'cause he'll clip your top if it'll fit. And he likes them little, likes them big, part in the middle or a wig, black or white or even red. The headless horseman needs a head.
With a hip, hip and a clippity-clop, he's out looking for a top-to-chop.
So don't stop to figure out a plan.
You can't reason with a headless man.
So after dark, you can't be good. Stay at home the way that you should. 'Cause right outside and waiting there is the headless horseman. I'm getting out of here.
Hello, everyone. This is Zoe once again, welcoming you back to Not Just Yesterday, the Roddy McDowell podcast, and wishing you a very happy Halloween. I thought you might want some company as you're putting the finishing touches on your plans for your parties this evening, so I chose a quick little adventure into the slightly supernatural on this chilly 31st of October. Today, I will be discussing the pilot of Rod Serling's second most popular television series, Night Gallery. But I won't be discussing the entire movie. Since Roddy only appears in the first quarter of the 98-minute film, I am only going to be discussing his part of the episode today. This will not only cut down on your time spent listening to the show while you prepare for your Halloween get-togethers, but it will also prepare you for the night ahead by making those tingles start running up your spines. I would also like to note, before I get started, that as there wasn't any research available for this episode, I will only be doing a synopsis today. Due to the lack of research and the rich voices in this pilot, I will be featuring many clips from the episode to fill up the time and also immerse you more deeply into its creepy atmosphere. And so we begin with episode 10 of Not Just Yesterday.
Every night at 7, you walk in as fresh as clover, and I begin to sigh all over again. Every night at 7, you come by like May returning, and me, oh my, I start in yearning again. You seem to bring faraway spring near me. I'm always in full bloom when you're in the room, for every night at 7, every time the same thing happens, I fall once again in love, but only with you.
Good evening. and welcome to a private showing of three paintings displayed here for the first time. Each is a collector's item in its own way, not because of any special artistic quality, but because each captures on a canvas, suspends in time and space, a frozen moment of a nightmare. Our initial offering, a small Gothic item in blacks and grays, a piece of the past known as the family crypt. This one we call simply the cemetery. Offered to you now, 6 feet of earth and all that it contains. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Night Gallery.
Release date, November the 8th, 1969. Segment title, The Cemetery. Segment runtime, 33 minutes, 24 seconds. The Cemetery is the first in a trio of segments to make up a 98-minute pilot for the series of Night Gallery. It would be followed by two more segments, starting with one entitled Eyes, starring Joan Crawford, and directed by an up-and-coming young director named Steven Spielberg. And finally a segment called The Escape Route, starring Richard Kiley. In The Cemetery, Roddy McDowall plays the lead role of Jeremy Evans, a spoiled and greedy young man whose desires for riches and comfort absolutely consume him. The episode begins by showing us the exterior of the home of Jeremy's ailing uncle, Mr. William Hendricks, played by veteran character actor George McCready. As the camera pans over the property, we see a graveyard, directly next to the large mansion house, covered in dusty, graying vines and blown about with sand and dirt from the earth around it. This is the family cemetery, where all the Hendricks bloodline have been buried for the last few centuries. After a moment, we are taken inside the house, and before being led up the stairs, see a painting of the very same cemetery which we have just been introduced to outside. We step back and begin to follow slowly behind Mr. Hendricks' butler, Osmond Portefoy, played by the marvelous stage and film actor Ozzie Davis. Portefoy is a distinguished, if not a bit stiff, gentleman who has been in the employ of Mr. Hendricks for most of his life. He appears to be completely devoted to his employer and seems only to want to do the best he can to take care of him. As Portefoy climbs the stairs to William's bedroom, we follow closely behind, stopping briefly to glimpse a beautiful painting of William Hendricks in his youth. Mr. Hendricks is next introduced to us, as his face is the first thing we glimpse when Portefoy opens his bedroom door. William Hendricks has suffered a stroke, which has left him incapable of speech and unable to use his hands properly.
Anything more you need, Mr. Hendricks? Then I'll move you to the window, sir, for a few minutes.
Grunting in protest, William points to the side of the room at something we don't immediately see off camera. Obeying his directional indication, Portefoy wheels him over to an easel at the corner of the room. With the help of his dedicated butler, Mr. Hendricks picks up a paintbrush, dips it into some paint, and attempts to add some more detail to a painting he had begun working on before his stroke. But the weakness in his hands has made this an impossible task, and as the brush touches the canvas, it is easily wrenched from his hand and falls helplessly to the floor. Defeated, William looks at Portefoy and shakes his head sadly. Crossing his arms and bowing his head in resignation, he allows the butler to wheel him to the window. Portefoy opens the drapes in order to enable William to look out of the window, and then prepares to leave the room, picking up a full and untouched lunch tray he had brought into his employer earlier that afternoon. In a corner office room on the first floor adjacent to the stairwell, we see Jeremy Evans putting some papers away in a drawer and walking over to the door of the office. He then spies Portefoy coming down with his uncle's untouched lunch tray. Finding the temptation to be playful, too strong to ignore, Jeremy addresses the butler.
Oh, appetite not so good today.
It never is at lunchtime, sir.
Well, then why do you load it up that way, Portefoy? That is wasteful, Portefoy.
Mr. Hendricks doesn't complain, Mr. Jeremy. And he also pays for it.
Tell me something, Portefoy. During all those 30 years you have been waiting hand and foot on that dying blob of flesh upstairs, you didn't know there was a nephew in the woodwork, did you, Portefoy?
Nor did your uncle, sir.
Well, now you do. So dwell on it, Portafoy. Tell me something, Portafoy. When did my uncle paint that one?
Just before his last stroke, sir.
How festive. Yeah, which brings to question, Portafoy, not only my uncle's minimal talents, but also his somewhat morbid preoccupation with all things dead and dying. Tell me something. What did my uncle do for kicks before his several illnesses? I mean, with all that money, what other interests did he have besides painting?
His painting has been his only pleasure, sir, in the house. It's all he's cared for.
Oh, yeah. So my dear late mother used to tell me, Portafoy, that she herself died at a relatively early age from overwork and a surplus of pride. She couldn't bring herself to crawl across to that rich recluse of a brother of hers. She had a dignity to consider, Portafoy. That was her long suit, dignity. As a result, I have spent a good deal of my life acquiring a taste for the good life, but somehow never acquiring the means.
How sad, sir.
Oh, it's only a passing sadness, Portafoy. If painting was my uncle's only indulgence, I anticipate a much more carefree existence. As of the day, he stops staring at this particular point of view and becomes a part of it. Why don't you say what you're thinking, Portafoy? I am a scoundrel, am I not?
You're a swine, sir. Oh,
what refreshing candor. Well, now, you just get that right out of your system. You hear, Portafoy? Because as of the day I take over here and you bear those ancient fangs at me, I'm going to pull them one by one.
Looking slyly over his shoulder back at Portafoy, Jeremy begins walking up the stairs. Stopping briefly to look at the portrait of his uncle, he raises his eyebrows in a moment of indifference before entering his uncle's bedroom.
Uncle? Uncle, I've come to have a little chat with you. Now, don't you move, no siree. You just sit right there and you let me handle all the conversation. Oh, you know, I have had the most interesting morning. Oh, I have. I went through all the correspondence in your desk. Yeah, guess what I came across? Yeah, correspondence? Yeah. Letters between you and your lawyer? Having to do with... Yeah. Having to do with your will. Oh, Uncle, I tell you, I was really impressed by your literary style. Yes, sirree. Cogent, right to the point. I mean, you say what you have to say. Very impressed. And as to the contents, more impressed. I mean, to discover that you had made my mother your beneficiary, I tell you, now that touched me, Uncle. I was deeply touched. And now, what was the other thing? Oh, yeah, I know. I wrote it down. I got it right here. That should she not be alive, it would go to her sole survivor. Well, now, Uncle... Can you believe me when I tell you that when I read that, I wept. And I actually wept. Oh, what a good heart. What massive compassion. Yeesh, it's stuffy in here, isn't it? Yeah. Don't you think it's stuffy in here, Uncle? Yeah. Hey. Oh, yeah, that's better. But now, I wouldn't call for Portafoy, Uncle. Look, now, really, I wouldn't. Now, why disturb that old gentleman? I mean, he has been waiting hand and foot on you for 30 years, so why don't we just give him the afternoon off? Now, I have been told by your medical advisors to keep you away from drafts. It seems that you are susceptible to colds, perhaps even pneumonia. Well, now, let us just put that medical advice to the test, shall we?
Let us see just how susceptible you are. Voila! Isn't that refreshing, Uncle? Oh, for the cold, the wind.
Is that refreshing?
Yeah, and think of this, if you will, Uncle. Your last view of life. That family graveyard down there. Now you remember it well. Yeah. Drink it all in, Uncle. Like a new tenant investigating his new abode.
Help!
I shall leave you now, undisturbed.
And neither Portefeuille nor I shall come back in this room for, well, let us say an hour, Uncle. Or perhaps two. However long it takes. However long it takes to, simplify things.
Terrified and vainly trying to wheel himself away from the offending cold of the open window, William Hendricks, taking deep breaths and trying to wrap his robe more closely about him, begins to cough as he catches cold, while he stares in horror at the family cemetery directly below his bedroom window. Later that night, Jeremy stands over a blazing fire as the clock in the house strikes 8. The doctor has been called to the house to examine his uncle, who is now near death's door, thanks to Jeremy's cold-heartedness, and he is awaiting news of his uncle's demise. Walking toward the stairwell, Jeremy is met by his uncle's lawyer, Mr. Carson.
No change. Doctor says he may remain in a coma for some time.
Pity.
I'm told you've become acquainted with certain aspects of the will.
Only certain aspects that were lying around loose and unattended in my uncle's desk. Tell me, who told you of my comforting discovery?
A little bird.
A little bird in a butler's suit. Who should watch out that he doesn't get his little beak smashed. However, Mr. Carson, seeing that my mother was the major beneficiary and I am her sole survivor, but that would mean that everything would come to me.
The man's not dead yet. Do you suppose you might stifle those great expectations of yours till the body's cold?
Mr. Hendricks has passed on.
He never regained consciousness.
Claim my inheritance now?
Would it be too much trouble to first go through the motions of a funeral and a reasonable period of mourning?
Is that a legal requirement, Counselor?
Let's say it's just what might be expected of a civilized man, as an act of respect and appreciation.
Well, you see, Mr. Carson, I'm not a civilized man. I'm a black sheep nephew. With an itch. And now, Doctor, if I may impose upon you to take care of the burial and all that, put it on the bill.
You'll be buried in the family plot. He'd mentioned that to me many times.
Lovely. And now, if either one of you gentlemen should need me, I will be in there.
Both doctor and lawyer momentarily look back at Jeremy in disgust, and after a moment's pause, both begin to leave the house as Jeremy opens his uncle's bedroom door. Seeing his uncle still lying uncovered on the bed, a shocked and horrified Jeremy calls the doctor back.
Doctor! Doctor, shouldn't he be covered or something? Or his hands folded? I mean, isn't that part of the ritual, that he look at peace?
He should be resurrected for as long as it takes to cut you off and boot you out. That would give him peace. Never mind, Portefeuille. We'll show ourselves out.
Would you care to pay your last respects, Portefeuille?
He's gone, sir?
Permanently. Item of interest, Portefeuille. There is a small stipend mentioned in the will for you. I believe it's $80 a month for as long as you shall live.
$80. $80 a month. I'd like to stay, sir. With your permission.
Oh, excellent. Crazy.
Well, I'll tell you what, Portafoy. First thing on the agenda will be to remove the bulk of this grotesquerie and...
Literally stopping in his tracks, both physical and verbal, Jeremy stares, momentarily paralyzed at the painting of the family plot, which his uncle had painted before his last stroke. Portafoy, not missing a beat, asks him if there is something he wants.
Something, sir?
Well, that's all.
Odd, sir?
Hey, look at this.
Look at what, sir?
The picture, the painting, stupid. Look at it.
Walking up the stairs, Portafoy reaches the painting at eye level and takes a good look at it. Jeremy mumbles to himself.
It's been awful.
Portafoy, again, not missing a beat, responds.
I don't understand.
Look, haven't you got eyes? Can't you see? Now, that has been altered. It's a freshly dug grave.
I see nothing wrong, sir.
Well, forget it. Just forget it. You may go now. I'd like my dinner at the usual time.
Jeremy is disturbed by the strange experience, but does the best he can to shake off his crawling skin as he climbs back up the stairs to his dead uncle's bedroom. Nervously, Jeremy runs to the door to check if the corpse is still there. The door is still open. Peeking inside and seeing that the body hasn't moved, he breathes a sigh of relief and shuts the door behind him, as the screen fades to black and the scene changes to the following night. Two men are covering over William Hendricks' grave after the funeral, and two voices are heard laughing flirtatiously from inside the house. The camera slowly pans from the graveyard into the house, where Jeremy is seen coming out of a room on the first floor with an attractive blonde in a yellow dress and a red scarf. They are both quite drunk. Laughing raucously, the couple walks to the front door together, as Jeremy whispers something unheard by us in the woman's ear. These whispers make her scream with laughter, and he opens the front door to allow her to leave as they laugh together. Smacking her backside flirtatiously, Jeremy closes the door behind her and leans against it, taking a long swig of the alcoholic drink that remains in his glass. A moment later, he spies Portafoy.
Well, as I breathe and live, if it isn't Osmond Portafoy. Osmond Portafoy.
If there's nothing else, sir, I thought I'd lock up and retire.
Yeah, that is your life, isn't it, Portafoy? Locking up and retiring. You know, to my dying day, I'm going to carry a picture of you walk through life. You know, stiff back, straight legged, carrying a tray and towels over your arm, and that reproving look in your eye. Hey, you know that look. Now, don't you, Portafoy? How shall I describe it? Like a bank manager finding an incorrect balance.
Stopping again in his tracks, Jeremy calls attention to the painting for the second time.
It's changed again. Changed again. Portafoy. There is a casket in that painting now. There is a casket in there now. That was not there before.
When Portafoy doesn't respond, he grabs the painting off the wall and runs to the cemetery. Comparing the picture to his uncle's grave, a confused Jeremy mutters,
"What is happening? What in God's name is happening?" Oof.
running back inside, Jeremy throws the canvas on the fire and watches it begin to burn. Thinking he has won, he takes a cigarette from a box on the table and laughs as he walks up the stairs and lights it up. Triumphantly, he takes his still-blazing lighter and lifts it to the spot on the wall where the painting he had just burned once hung, only to discover to his horror that the painting is still there and hasn't budged. Now, the painting contains a casket, standing erect, containing the body of his uncle, which is uncovered and beginning to arise from the grave. Realizing what he is seeing, Jeremy covers his eyes with both of his arms and screams at the top of his lungs in pure terror. The next morning, Portefeuille carries a tray into Jeremy's room.
I brought you some hot tea, sir.
I don't want any hot tea.
Suit yourself, sir.
Portefeuille?
Yes, sir.
Did you look at the painting like I told you?
Yes, sir. It's hanging there as usual.
As usual? Oh, I don't understand. I mean, I burned it. I threw it on the fire and I watched it bubble and crinkle up. I watched it disappear. And there it is on the wall. As usual.
Imagination, sir.
Imagination.
You burned me. Deliberately.
Oh, no, Portefeuille. That was your imagination. Yeah, the tray, the teapot, your scalded wrist. That's all your imagination. I mean, isn't that the catch-all explanation for to cover all the phenomena that goes on around here? I tell you, this is not a haunt. It's a prolonged hallucination. Get out of here. I want you. I'll call you.
You call me, Mr. Jeremy. You call long distance.
What are you talking about?
I do not intend to spend another night in this house.
No?
No. In life, he needed me. But in death, it's obvious he's strong enough to take care of himself.
Now you look here, old man. Death is final. Death is it.
I think not, Mr. Jeremy. I think there are things stronger than death and more lasting than the grave.
Portefeuille?
I think hate is stronger than death, Mr. Jeremy, and I think you're beginning to realize that. I shall spend the night in the hotel in town and send for my things later.
Yeah, but what about me? I mean, what am I supposed to do? Who's going to tend to my wants now?
Use your imagination, Mr. Jeremy. You're rather good at that.
With the angry butler now preparing to leave, a confused Jeremy turns to face his uncle's portrait, which is still hanging on the wall at the top of the stairs. In a tone of exhausted resignation, Jeremy addresses the painting.
Tell me something, Uncle. Why don't you stay where you belong?
In a sudden fit of rage, Jeremy tosses his drink in the air and smashes it against the painting on the wall, several feet above him, and announces,
"That is as close to a toast as you'll ever get from me, alive or dead."
As the liquid from the broken glass drips pitifully down the canvas of the painting, Jeremy, a frightened look on his face, stares lengthily upon the visage of his late uncle and swallows with fear. Later that night, Jeremy is lying in his uncle's bed. The window is open and air is flowing into the room, carrying the curtains away and causing them to float in a ghost-like fashion from the aggressive breeze. Jeremy's eyes are wide open, and he is absolutely petrified, unable to sleep. Suddenly, he is roused by a noise, which sounds very like the cemetery gate being opened and shut. Startled, he calls out Portefeuille's name and gets up to seek him out. Putting his robe on, he leaves the bedroom and turns the light on in the stairway. Again, he calls out the butler's name and begins to come down the stairs. When he reaches the painting, which has frightened him on several occasions already, he is drawn to look upon it once more, and is again terrified when he sees the grizzled figure of his uncle's corpse exiting the graveyard and coming near to the house. In a fit of terror, Jeremy runs all around the house, calling desperately for the butler.
operator. Yeah, would you put me through to the hotel in town? Yeah, I know, but I don't have the number. Yeah, I would be grateful. Hello? Hello, would you connect me with Osmond Portefeuille? He checked in there this afternoon. What do you mean you can't ring his room? You gotta ring. Well, I don't care if it's 3 o'clock in the morning now. You...
Unable to raise Portefeuille on the phone, Jeremy goes back to the stairwell, only to see that the painting shows his uncle's corpse is getting even closer to the house. He is now able to hear footsteps creeping up outside and goes to the phone again to call the police.
Operator? My name is Jeremy Evans. I'm at the Hendricks house. And there's an intruder here. Now, would you call the police and have them come over right away? No! I tell you, I can hear him outside. Now, would you please call the police right now and have them come over right away? Yeah.
The painting now shows an image of William Hendricks' grizzled corpse banging on the front door.
Who is out there?
Terrified, Jeremy attempts to climb the stairs to escape, but falls. In a fit of enraged horror, he screams. Grabbing his uncle's portrait off the wall, Jeremy is thrown off balance and falls, screaming all the way down the stairs, breaking his neck and falling dead at the bottom. When the door opens, we see a pair of feet walking slowly over to Jeremy and flipping his body over. A dark hand reaches out and grabs a tuft of Jeremy's hair, pulling the face over to one side and then letting go, allowing the broken neck to snap back over to the opposite side. Satisfied that Jeremy is dead, the dark figure walks calmly over to the phone and picks it up. As the camera pans up, we see that the intruder is, in fact, Portefeuille.
Hello, Doctor? This is Portefeuille at the Hendricks house. I'm afraid there's been an accident, sir. Yes, sir. Mr. Jeremy seems to have fallen down the stairs. I believe he's dead. It appears his neck has been broken. Thank you, Doctor. I'll leave a light on. So I think a long vacation would be in order for you, Gibbons. You have performed your task extraordinarily well. You really have.
15 paintings at $500 apiece. Cheap at the price, I'd say.
Indeed, indeed.
Thank you. Should I count it?
If you like, it's all there. Plus 500 extra. You're no Rembrandt, Gibbons. But you do have an uncanny knack of imitating other people's style.
You can afford it, I take it.
The savings of a lifetime. But just a temporary inconvenience. Perhaps I neglected to tell you. Mr. Hendricks was a most thoughtful old gentleman. In his will, he stipulated that if there were no surviving family, 6 months after his demise, his entire estate would be inherited by his old family retainer, yours truly. Run along now, Gibbons. Enjoy the fruits of your labors.
What if the nephew hadn't broken his neck? What would you have done then? Put something in his brandy?
Don't be crude, Gibbons. If that unfortunate accident hadn't happened to him, he would have gone slowly out of his mind. And once he was committed, I would be just where I am now. Same end, just different means. Would you throw this in a ditch someplace? The trappings of death depress me. From now on, this is going to be a place of cheer. Well, good night, Gibbons.
Good night, Portefeuille.
Mr. Portefeuille.
Mr. Portefeuille.
Rest easy, Mr. Hendricks. Rest easy.
Looking up at the painting on the corner wall of the stairs, Portefeuille sees Jeremy rise from the grave and begin to enter the house just as his uncle had stalked him.
Back, Jeremy. Back into the ground where you belong. Back, Jeremy.
As the front door opens, Portefeuille backs himself up against the far wall, screams, and dies of acute fear as the scream fades to black. The unspoken moral of the story is to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, because you never know who might come back from the dead to wreak revenge upon you for an evil deed. That's all for this episode of Not Just Yesterday, the Roddy McDowell Podcast. Thank you for listening. This is Zoe Dean signing off. I hope you all have a very safe and happy Halloween. And as always, dear friends, remember to keep smiling.
You seem to bring faraway spring near me. I'm always in full bloom when you're in the room, for every night at 7. Every time the same thing happens, I fall once again in love, but only with you.
Every night at 7.
Mansion on an old forgotten road where the better ghosts and goblins always hang out. One night they threw a party in a manner a la mode, and they cordially invited all the gang out. At a dark, bewitching hour, when the fun was loud and hearty, a notorious wallflower became the life of the party. The spooks were having their midnight fling. The merrymaking was in full swing. They shrieked themselves into a cheerful trance when the skeleton in the closet started to dance. Now a goblin giggled with fiendish glee. A shout rang out from a big banshee. Amazement was in every ghostly glance when skeleton in the closet started to dance. All the witches were in stitches while his steps made rhythmic thumps, and they nearly dropped their broomstick when he tried to do the bumps. You never heard such an ugly laughter, such hilarious groans. when skeleton in closet rat his
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Not Just Yesterday, the Roddy McDowell podcast. The podcast is hosted, written, edited, and produced by Zoe Dean. The co-writer and constant help with this podcast is Julie Carricker. The thoughts expressed on this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of Barron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The films and television shows discussed and heard in these podcasts remain the property of their respective owners. Not Just Yesterday, the Roddy McDowell podcast is not affiliated with any major film or television company, and no copyright infringement is intended. Please visit barrenspace.com for this and other amazing content. This has been a Barren Space production.